Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's informal courses for adults.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. How does art transform objects? Does it explore their inherent meaning or change their meaning or force us to question why we thought they had meaning in the first place? And is great art always about more than what it appears to be? These are some of the questions critics inevitably wrestle with when they consider the work of Jeff Koons. He has created works in a variety of media, and some of his most instantly recognizable sculptures include Balloon Dog, Balloon Flower, and a series of works made from inflatable plastic. You can find images of them online, many of them anyway, at jeffkoons.com. Koons has exhibited his work at some of the world's most prestigious museums, including the Tate, the Museum of Modern Art, and the National Gallery, and his works regularly sell for millions of dollars. He's in town to address the sold-out Nasher Salon Series tonight. There is also a 3 p.m. gathering at Booker T. Washington High School, for which tickets are still available. We are delighted that he could make time for us this afternoon. Jeff, welcome to Think.
It's wonderful to be here.
Why do you make art?
Art's an activity that I got involved with at a very young age. The presence within my life started around three, and it always gave me a sense of self and a sense of possibilities. I could always feel that I was becoming something through art.
Was it about the process, or was it about what you would be finished with when you were done?
It was the process that through some type of internal recognition of kind of getting a sense of, okay, I'm Jeff, okay? It gives you a sense of self that you're able to move externally. It's existentialism. I mean, you go outside yourself. You're able to look and embrace a larger world.
And do you remember when you were a kid, and my understanding is that it was drawing that you really liked to do when you were very small. Is that right?
I did pastels and drawings and you know, popsicle sticks, everything that kids do.
Did you want to hang on to all of those and sort of collect them in one place, or once they were out of your head, could you sort of leave them on the ground?
Yeah, I really have only like one artwork from when I was a child.
So nobody recognized what was coming.
No, I mean, my parents were really supportive, and I took art lessons as a child. But it was always this sense of process and just a sense of having curiosity in the world and leaving oneself, going outside of yourself, feeling a sense of the possibility of your parameters expanding.
Critics seem either not to believe you about the message that you're sending with your work, but praise your cleverness in sort of criticizing the art world through your work, or else they take you at your word that it's sort of it is what it is, and then they resent you for it. Does that make you crazy?
You know, when I was younger, I took the responsibility to try to speak about my work so that I could try to communicate to people what my intentions have been. And I really, I trust in that. I mean, to me, it's a very intuitive process. But I think people are always surprised by honesty. And if you're honest with people and you're direct, they find that kind of shocking. And so I'm always presented a lot of times by some critics of having intentions and interest in things that are so far removed from my true intention. I think my basic intention is generosity.
Do you think that's about their sort of need to have figured you out?
Part of it's that, and it's just sometimes the misunderstanding of how art really can function. A lot of times, you know, you can go through life and really not experience things, and critics who are involved with art can go through life and really not become so profoundly involved with art, or what, or even look at the possibility, oh, it could perform this way also. And, you know, art is a form of power, and people try to maintain and control power in different ways.
When you're at a level, as you have been for some time now, where your work is known around the world, it's sought by collectors around the world for top dollar, the story of the artist plays into everything as much as anything else. You know, they're not just buying this work, but they're buying work by someone who has done these 50 things. How conscious are you of that need to sort of maintain the story and to be as much part of the work as an individual as the work is itself?
I just think about my interests, and I try to follow those interests. And if you do that, it takes you to a very metaphysical place. And that's the only activity that I'm involved with. I don't try to create some type of narrative of my own life. I've always have just tried to be very engaged with my work. And when I was a really young artist and I would start to create things that I felt were independent from any type of training that I had, and I would feel the visceral quality of these images or these objects and, you know, really feel the power of images, I would just get carried away with that and have a dialogue with my generation. But over a period of time, other younger people that you're engaged with, they even though they say they want to participate, they start creating a lot of excuses for not participating. And so when the ball was thrown to me, I caught it. And I wanted to catch it. I wanted to participate. I wanted to be involved in the dialogue of art. And that's what happens in life. If you want to be engaged in dialogues, people are looking for you. They want you to take things to what your possibilities are.
You're often cited as the link between Andy Warhol and Damien Hirst. Do you accept that?
Well, you know, I'm always honored by that link. I enjoy both artists very much. I think that Marcel Duchamp is really kind of a grandfather of all of us. And we share interests about the ready-made and his discourse. And if, you know, even just saying Marcel's kind of pinpointing it too much because, you know, you have the whole history of art of Manet and Courbet and Boucher, and you can just continue to go back through history to the early Venuses or something. And all of these artists, their contribution, their participation in a dialogue is what you come in contact with when you profoundly think about art and let art enter into your life, and it connects you through human history.
A lot of what you have done, and you mentioned the ready-made, has put objects into galleries and museums that people typically don't take a second look at, or they certainly don't think of them as pieces of art. Can you talk about what you're thinking about and what is special about the things that you choose to capture in that way?
I think all art is metaphor. So, you know, if you pick up a ready-made object or an everyday object or image, that's really just a metaphor for people. And it's about things outside your body. So you can look at things that are objects, and objects really aren't that important to us. I mean, certain day-to-day activities, we use them, but other individuals and how we judge ourselves and how we look at ourselves and how we view the world is really through other people. So these objects are metaphors for people. But I remember the first time, like, buying an object and working with it, there was a certain openness and just an air about it, just a vastness, just such clarity. It's like pre-birth, pre-life and death. It's just so vast.
Do you feel like you give an object a soul when you work with it this way?
Well, I think that you contextualize it, you give it different polarities, you can make it more dimensional within a discourse that can relate to many different things. You can view things from many different directions, and contextually that can happen. But just seeing something on its own, letting it just display itself, to display its kind of integrity of being, I enjoyed that.
You have the ability to have a sort of a terrifying kind of power in that at this point you could work long and hard on something, take an everyday object or anything else and sort of put it out there as a work of art. Or if you were in the mood to do so, you could just sort of grab something and put it out there. And because of who you are, people might not be able to tell the difference. Do you ever does that power sort of terrify you?
But
do you understand what I'm asking?
But with art, you can tell the difference. Mm-hmm. And the people that are attracted to my work are attracted to a certain intellectual, physical, visceral experience. So if I just put something out there, they're going to look at it, and they're not going to feel or make intellectual connections the way they normally would. And they would recognize immediately that this is not what they're seeking. This isn't an interaction which is helping expand their interests. So you can't get away with it. I mean, I have no interest in that because it's about living your life. It's about reaching your potential. It's not about getting away with something. And that's why even when we were just in a huge market, a very expansive market, I really kept my production down because I just had interest in creating things that I really believed in and that I could stand behind 100%.
Once you have connected so deeply with something that you've worked on, is it a sacrifice to let it go?
Well, you always feel connected to it. And so, you know, it's easy. I have children, so I like to maintain one or two things for my family. And I like to live with other art because I'm so involved with my own work. So I can let go because you always feel that it's part of you. You experienced it. You know, you kind of gave birth to it. So it's easy. And the art world, it's kind of a small world. And so it's like it goes to a friend's home or it goes to an institution you really believe in. You know, it's a nice place.
Do you feel like the collection of art that you have, works by other artists, is your own work at all a dialogue with those, or is that a completely separate facet of your life?
You know, I think it is a dialogue because there are works that, you know, I respond to, that I find interest in. Recently, I just started living with a work that I got probably about a year ago, but Nicholas Nofer, an old master Dutch painting. I'm just overwhelmed by this piece. But I live with Poussin and Manet, Magritte, Picasso, and Dali, and Bouguereau, Courbet, Riemann Schneider, a wide range of art. And it carries me away. When I put my kids to bed at night, they all say, "Hey, Dad, the art game, please." And through the art game, if they can say, "Okay, this is the Magritte," or "this artist is from the 1500s, they can stay up another minute longer. So they love to play the art game. But it's so rewarding. My second to youngest, Blake, you ask him his favorite artist, he'll say Masses. And, you know, it's an old Dutch master. And so I'm happy for where they're being transported.
It's amazing to think that the kids you have living at home have no idea how lucky they are to live among these works.
Well, I think they enjoy life. And so I think they understand they're lucky. They're lucky that they're alive and that life's a fantastic opportunity.
Are they ever in the studio when you're working?
They stop in usually about once a week.
Mm-hmm. And so they must, especially the larger sculptural works, they must really respond to those. Or do they have favorite things that you do?
If I'm working with cartoon characters at all, they always like Popeye or the Hulk figures.
Yeah.
But usually if they come to the studio, there are different people that work with me that are friends of the family, so they always love to go speak with them. And then they like to jump on the computers and go to sites that are really of kind of their interest.
Jeff Koons is my guest. He's in town for a Nasher Salon series tonight. There's also space available at an afternoon lecture that starts at 3 o'clock at Booker T. Washington High School for the Performing and Visual Arts. We'll return to our conversation in just a moment, and if you'd like to join us, you can call 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's continuing and professional education. Hundreds of non-credit personal enrichment and professional development courses beginning in January. Details online at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is artist Jeff Koons. He's in town for several events sponsored by the Nashville Salon Series. While the Evening Salon has sold out, there are tickets available for a 3 o'clock event. That's this afternoon at Booker T. Washington High School in downtown Dallas. You can find information about all the events at NashvilleSalonSeries.org. If you want to join the conversation, you can call 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think at kera.org. You have, Jeff, I guess, a sort of manufacturing facility within your studio where people work for you and with you. Can you talk about the process of any work from conception through fabrication?
To have an idea for a work of art just comes from everyday life. So I never sit down and in an analytical way try to, create a work of art. I don't think you can do that. If you try to do that, it just becomes a decorative process. So you really can't create art. You just have to be open to things that you have interest in. And so if something presents itself, I'll follow that interest and I'll focus on that interest. And before you know it, it takes you to a very metaphysical place where all of these connections start to happen. Narratives happen that connect it to a much vaster kind of a perspective than just itself. And that's where I'd like to go.
So you have this vision for something, but then you have to communicate it to the team of people who will actually put it into existence. And how do you talk to the people you work with about exactly what it is you want?
Usually these images or objects, I really think, are archetypal. When you focus on something and you really continue to think about it, this metaphysical place is really a place where archetypes come from. It's a profound place, and a lot of kind of communal history is there in images and objects. And I think these things help keep us alive, the vocabulary that you come to. So if I have an idea, I'll present it to people. Sometimes it's made in-house, like a painting we'll make at the studio or a smaller domestic piece, or depending on the idea, it'll go to Germany. I work with a fabricator there or in Los Angeles. And it's my responsibility to teach all the fabricators how to look at things. I mean, this is what I care about. And you can't ever assume that they know exactly what you want. You really have to go over things and communicate to them, how to look at this, how to care for this object, this image that they're creating. And it takes time.
Do you see them as craftspeople or as artists in their own right?
I see them as, in the studio, family, because it's a kind of a sense of family. But it's my artwork, and they're following my direction. And so they all have their own artistic backgrounds. So within the studio, they're kind of artisans. Outside the studio, they're artists. When they make their work, they're artists. They really do know how to see and to do things, achieve things. But when they're at the studio, it's all just following my interests.
I can't imagine the sort of HR challenge of hiring someone who will effectively function as your hands and in some cases your eyes on as a project is coming together.
Mm. And that's the way it works. So, sometimes when artists have always worked with artisans throughout history, it's the only way you could make more than one painting a year or make one sculpture a year. And it's a direct connection to that, just the way, your mind will tell your hand to kind of softly polish something or to just make a little incision right in this area. It's the same as telling another individual just to do that. And they can do it just as sensitive and do it exactly the same way you would.
Do you have the same temptations that the rest of us do to sort of touch the works as they're coming together and after they're complete?
Maybe not so much, but what I always have to fight is staying pure to something and not overworking something. It's really about the energy, and art's very much about being in the moment, and it's keeping something pure and keeping it to go through this kind of pipeline of production as quickly as possible. And things slow it up. The more success you have, the more it gets slowed up because everybody takes it very, very seriously. And when you're younger, you're taking it very seriously, but most people around you really aren't. And so it goes quicker. And so I just have to keep everything kind of moving. It's one of the main things I have to do.
Do you have a different kind of confidence now that, your work is sought all over the place and you have really probably the best, you know, technicians working for you?
You know, your relationship, Chris, with art changes every day. And when I think about what art meant to me as a child, when I was 16 years old, you know, art, really, I would be very anxious about it. I knew that I could do something well, and people would pat me on the back and say, you know, Jeff, you can really draw. And it ended up, it was really the only area that I was prepared to go to college was really for art. But over time, you learn how to remove anxiety. And I think that the ultimate place and the way that anxiety is removed is through self-acceptance. And then when you accept yourself, it takes you into objective art, which is the acceptance of others. And a state of true acceptance, I think, is a state really without any anxiety. And that's kind of that pure place. A little earlier, I was speaking about like an object and just this air around the object, this very, very pure state. And I think that's the highest state of art, which is acceptance.
It's so interesting that you look at it that way, because I think there are a lot of artists working today who feel like the process is all about that anxiety, and about for them it really the kernel of everything is sort of a core unhappiness. But it doesn't sound like you relate to that.
I have to say, emotionally, I prefer the other side.
You'll live longer.
Yeah, and but the because I've always felt that at the end of your life, I could always imagine that when the last breath is leaving your body, that all of a sudden everything would be very, very clear, and just how accessible everything was, just how simple everything was, and that, you know, if we only could experience that before that last breath in life. And I think that through acceptance, that you can reach that. And I think that if all anxiety is removed, that everything does present, the clarity of everything is right here.
How often do you go back and think about things that you have done decades earlier and sort of what they meant? And then are you tempted to sort of revisit the same things? And because, as you said, art changes all the time and you change all the time.
Occasionally I'll speak about my work. So when I do that, I'll be presented with the images of these past works, and I reflect on those works. So, you know, I have a certain interpretation of why I did those works, but my interests continue to change, and my involvement with art changes. So at one time in my life, I could have been much more interested in a narrative of that. Immediately, I'd have two kind of panoramic ends of a story. And now I look at the narrative as much, much vaster, that it's a narrative more of my whole life than of a particular body of work that I'm working on.
You said earlier that your work is mostly about generosity. Does it matter to you that everyone who experiences these pieces comes away with that? Is it okay with you if they get something totally different from viewing a work?
I think the art happens in the viewer, and objects of art are really unimportant other than that they're these transponders of information. They make these self-reflections take place. That's where their importance lies. But those actual reflections happen within the viewer, and that's where the art is. That's where the value is. And so, you know, I want people to look at my work and feel that they can achieve something, that whatever their possibility, whatever their interest was, whatever level of excitement of what it feels to be alive is enhanced within them. That's what I'm seeking. So more on a negative side of something which doesn't really present opportunity, I'm not so interested in.
Artist Jeff Koons is my guest. He is in town for Nasher Salon Series events this afternoon and this evening. You can learn more at nashersalonseries.org. If you want to join the conversation, you can call 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. Have you experienced the artist equivalent of writer's block?
When you're younger, especially when you're like going to art school and you're making art for 9 months and then it's vacation time, basically. School's out for 3 months. When you stop making art, there's a sense that, okay, now you're going to get back into it. And so when you're younger, you learn right away that it's like riding a bike. I mean, once you just start doing it again, it just starts kind of flowing. So if you haven't made art, maybe you'd make a work or two and it'd feel a little awkward. And then all of a sudden on your fourth painting, it's kind of like, you know, this is hitting. This is really, okay, this is interesting. This is what I want to be doing. And by the sixth painting or something, you're right there. And so, you know, that's the way that works. When you're working on a body of work, maybe you'll have high production and very focused for 2 months. Then you want to recreate yourself, pardon me, 2 years. Then you'll kind of want to recreate yourself. So you'll just, you know, look at the world around you for a couple months. And then it's, again, it's just this process that, okay, I have interest in this, I have interest in that. You start to focus on it. Art's something that it doesn't leave you because it's just this vehicle about making a reflection on what it means to be alive and what potential you have to make a gesture to that, to be in the moment and to kind of just celebrate being in the moment.
Do you have a sense that as an artist, you feel things more profoundly than the people who come to your work and sort of create the art in the mind of the viewer, as it were?
No. But I think that some people are more in tune to express themselves. And when I say express themselves, to want to communicate with other people, to interact, I think people feel different chemically, their own bodies, the way you respond to the world intellectually and physically. Some people can feel more excitement, you know, it's just like taste. Some people, you know, their taste is enhanced. Some people, their vision's enhanced. Just an enlightenment of the senses is something that I think that art has a power to help refine.
Do you feel like art is something you have to do? That all that anxiety would come roaring back if you weren't in the process of creating things most of the time?
I wouldn't have as existential life as mm-hmm. I have without art. I'm sure that I could function as a human being, and I could work in a gas station, and I could change tires, and I could do different things and be very happy in life. It's just I wouldn't be fulfilling the interests that I have kind of philosophically and also sociologically that I have.
When you're together with your friends socially, and I don't mean the people that you have to meet socially to sell work and things like that, is art often a topic of conversation?
It's always usually at the core of most things. Mm-hmm. In some way, I mean, we talk about other things. I live in New York City, but I have a guest house in Pennsylvania because I want to share this with my family that, you know, they're free of the art world and they can look at a more agrarian-based culture and enjoy that. But most of your friends and associates over the years end up to be involved that have similar interests that you have. So I would say three-quarters of the conversations are usually in some manner, if you dig deep enough over a period of time, we'll be speaking about art.
Do you accept commissions, or does most of your work get created and then people come and buy it? Is there sort of a typical MO?
Well, I've never done commissions, but people have come to me and they've said, you know, Jeff, we have a site, and maybe we have a museum, and we would like to have something at the entrance. And so, you know, I'll go and I'll look at it, and if I have an idea, you know, great. But and sometimes that happens. Sometimes it doesn't. But it's never been like somebody would come to me and say, you know, Jeff, I happen to make cars, and the car's named Apple and or Apple Slice. And so would you make an apple with a slice? And, I wouldn't do that because that really isn't art. That's something else. It's an activity, but it's not art.
You have done some work that sort of looks at advertising and takes a different view of things. That was never a field that you worked in directly, is that right?
No. When I was younger in college, I I did kind of window display. It was a kind of a form of advertising. I've always enjoyed sales. I was a broker, a commodities broker.
Those are two very different worlds, aren't they?
Well, you know, I think that all of these those areas of sales is really kind of a front line of morality in a society, and it's also it's about communication and it's about acceptance. When I was young, I'd go door to door selling gift wrapping paper or chocolates, and I would love knocking on the door, and you never knew who was going to answer. You know, what they looked like, what their voice was like. You didn't know what odor was going to come from the kitchen, and if you'd be invited into the home, you know, what the furniture would look like. But to try to meet kind of each other's needs, to communicate and to share something, I always enjoyed very much. And so I think that this interest in acceptance and of communication that I'm involved with today comes from this history when I was younger.
Well, and the door-to-door thing is interesting because obviously it's about communicating with people, but it's also about mystery in a way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's about people. I mean, it's about this interaction, and it's about morality too, because it's about having in a capitalist society, it's about, you know, having a product and having needs and aspirations and the meeting of these things. The person selling, also the person acquiring, and, you know, this kind of responsibility to each other.
Jeff Koons is my guest. He's in town for some Nasher Salon Series events. There is a lecture this evening that has been sold out, but there are still seats available for a 3 o'clock lecture at Booker T. Washington High School. You can learn more about those events at nashersalonseries.org. We'll be back to our conversation in just a moment. If you'd like to join us, you can send an email to think@kera.org or call 1-800-933-5372.
Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's continuing and professional education. Hundreds of non-credit personal enrichment and professional development courses beginning in January. Details online at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this afternoon is internationally acclaimed artist Jeff Koons. He is in town for a series of events for the Nasher Salon Series. You can find information at nashersalonseries.org. If during our conversation you want to look at Jeff's work, you can go to jeffkoons.com and see many of his major works. If you want to join the conversation, our number is 1-800-933-5372, and that's where we find Niels in Dallas. Hi, Niels.
Hey there. I was just wondering if Mr. Koons would have any idea about an individual to influence their artistic aspects. You know what I mean? As far as, I love art, but I'm not a very creative person as far as coming up with something on my own. But, I was just wondering if there might be a little advice that he could give for somebody who is I'm definitely interested in art. I mean, I go to the Dallas Museum of Art all the time, and I was just wondering.
What do you think, Jeff?
Neil, I think that the things that you like to look at when you go to a museum or different things in life that you respond to just continue to kind of celebrate those things and to think about them and follow the path that where these interests are really leading you to. Whenever you're conscious of something in the world, you start to recognize that it's everywhere around you. You could just start thinking about ladders, and before you know it, you're seeing ladders everywhere on the bus that drove by or over in this corner of a room. But I would really just follow the interests. And if there are different artists' work that you like, just to follow kind of their life history a little bit, to look into the way they interacted with art and ideas within their life.
I want to go back for a minute to something you were talking about before the break, and that was you talked about, you know, sales as sort of the baseline of morality in some ways. Where's the morality in art?
I think it's in everything. I think that what you're, from what your intention is in the creation of the work, it's to yourself first and foremost. The whole dialogue is with the self originally. If you're really making the things that you would like to do, that you're not squandering the moment of life, and then it's to your public that you really are trying to. Within your consciousness of your ability, trying to share that with them and making things that are past the self, even though the self is so important in the beginning to do what you would like to do, then your responsibility goes past the self into the communal.
Do you feel that people are more often than they ought to be seeking pleasure in art first and foremost rather than some kind of challenge?
Challenge can be pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that art, it functions, it's a very seductive thing. And the more that you have it, the more you want it. It's like eating a bag of chips or something like this, that you continue to have more desire for it. And you have a desire for stronger doses of it in a way, more intensity. So you want more of an intellectual challenge from it. You want more of a visceral feeling from the interaction with it. It's something that automatically takes you to a place that is expansive.
What it sounds like art is sort of always part of who you are and where you are. Is there ever a time when you need to escape and think about something entirely different? I know you do have young kids at home, so maybe you don't have the choice.
Yeah, I mean, but I think life is that way. And, to have a full life, there's, mundane areas of life and there are other areas that aren't so mundane. But it's just to enjoy being human. And I try to embrace everything. One thing that you can be challenged by is to put everything in play. So, you can wake up and just that every object you look at, every image, you want to stay conscious. It could be part of your work and, it can fit in there. So think about it. Can you use it? How can you use it? And it's a little exhausting to do. And so you can only do it for so long. And then before you know it, you just kind of stop playing that game. So I think that there's kind of an in and out on a conscious level of art.
Do you try to pay attention to, or do you try to actively avoid being aware of critical reception and public response to your work? Is it something that you really want to know about and therefore sort of move from what you're doing until you get to what sort of everybody likes, or do you not want that to cloud your vision?
I don't want to be naive of the perception. So, I'll follow and have a kind of a general understanding of how my work's being present it. But if I read something and I think, boy, that person didn't get it, I'll just feel like I failed. And it could just be one person and I'll feel like I failed. So I always feel that responsibility to try to make things that can work and communicate and get to this profound level within every viewer.
We have an email from Joe who says, I really want to express my excitement in listening to Jeff. As an artist, I think one's narrative can help or hurt the process of creation. Personally, I've found the world of art disheartening to the process of creation, but Jeff seems to have a narrative that offers some hope within the institution and the culture.
That's nice. Mm-hmm. That's a very nice email.
Do you, I guess you work with young artists in your studio. Do you mentor younger artists?
I like art. I mean, I like all types of work. And, I have a relatively unique opportunity. I have a tremendous platform to create things and to try to achieve certain things right now within my life. So I stay very focused on that. And I wish I could be a little broader with some of the involvement that I have in contemporary work with other artists. Because you end up being very, very absorbed in the activities that you're doing. So I'll hear about certain exhibitions, I'll go see them, and I look at different magazines and try to keep aware of activities that are going on. And I do interact with younger people through the studio, and also like today, going and speaking a little later, and I'll have groups come to the studio and to talk with them. So, and I guess through also making exhibitions that you you have a chance to bounce off kind of a public, a youthful public, and also an older public.
Are you typically able to predict the way people in an exhibition setting will respond to your work, or does it sometimes take you completely by surprise?
No, I think that if your audience, I think after a certain time period, you kind of know the people, what they're looking for, that are seeking your work. And because, you know, they're engaged in that dialogue and they're looking for that. You never know with people that aren't engaged, that are fresh to the work. And that's really kind of interesting. And you want to believe that you can have them have a certain response. But they're a little freer. And I think over time, they would probably end up with a similar response as people that are more familiar with the dialogue. But just because they may not even really be looking as closely, and they don't have more of a recent history of how to view it.
Why do you think people respond the way they do to so much of your work? And so many people sort of follow what you do, whether they will ever have a chance to own it, they look for it.
I would like to say because of the type of control that I've put into, you know, the realization of it and the creation of it. And I'm saying that in a positive way because I'm seeing that the response would be one that I was intended. If the response is one that's not intended, you know, I don't know. I don't know why. It would be that somewhere I failed. And it's not about making populist things that everything that everybody likes. It's not about making things that everybody likes, but it's about putting people in contact with what it means to be human. I mean, I like to think that that's really at the base of everything, to connect people to human history. And art's one of those vehicles.
Do we need to make an effort as a society to put more art in more public places and not maintain this idea that it belongs in a museum or it belongs in a gallery or it belongs in the home of someone with the means to own an iconic work?
It's great that art you know, can do that. I think that people, the way they look at their environment, they can look at things of having more importance than they may otherwise look at things. If they look at things with a sense of dignity, if they don't discriminate against things, if they just look at things with acceptance, everything is given kind of the same placement as a work of art. But art in public places, it is a wonderful thing. And there's dialogue also right now, even within the country, that we would have somebody that would politically also represent the arts. This could be a very positive thing politically.
Do you feel that your art is political in any capacity or in every capacity?
I think it's very political. Mm-hmm. I don't think that the work's political in any specific issue at this time. I think if you get involved in specific issues, you actually limit the power of your work. But I think that at the core of it, it's about you know, human dignity and human potential, and to give a platform to people, not to debase them, but to empower them.
Do you understand yourself as an artist in a fundamentally different way than you did before you made your living as an artist?
Your relationship with art always changes, so you know you have time to reflect about things. And there's when you're in your youth, you don't have the same kind of consciousness of your activities. You're more just in motion, and you kind of reflect about it a little later. When you get older, you have a little more chance. You have more time that you've been able to reflect on things. So I would know what I was doing. I understood the power of my work when I was younger. I always believed very much in my work, and I felt that what I was doing was beneficial to people, so I had tremendous energy with that understanding. but could you reflect?
Well, I was just wondering just whether or not you sort of see yourself in a different way, whether being a professional artist who this is sort of the way you make your living sort of justifies, mm-hmm. even in your own mind. And you talked about losing anxiety and just pushing forward and doing what you felt needed to be done. I'm wondering how that changed once you were able to stand up and say, this is the only way I support myself and this is who I am.
I always wanted that. And I remember when I was younger, I met Salvador Dali in New York, and I went up for the day because I knew he was going to be there. He said that he would meet me. And I met him at the St. Regis Hotel, and he said, would you like to go see an exhibition that I have at the Nodler Gallery? So we went there, and he posed for some photos. And I remember going back home that night and thinking, you know, this would be fantastic. You know, I can do this. I can just spend all my time making art. And, you know, I always wanted to participate. I wanted to spend every kind of waking moment to be able to be involved in art. And so it's something that I do have the opportunity now to do. I don't think anything changed other than I believe when I was younger, I made it very clear to the support mechanism of my art that I was very interested in their support, but it really had to be on my terms. And I was very independent before that. I worked as a broker, and I supported myself through Wall Street so that I could be independent, that I didn't need the support of the collector unless it was on my terms. And so, I was very grateful when that support came and that it was already at a level of support of really great collectors that I could continue to pursue these ideas.
What would you say is the most common misconception about who you are and what it is you're trying to do?
That I'm interested in money.
Because you make money, people assume that that's why you're doing it?
Yes, and people think that I have very high production, but I have very low production. I mean, the studio has 100 people working at the studio, but we probably produce a maximum about 8 paintings a year. And maybe we can produce maybe one sculpture a month. And those works are all, they were designed back in 2003 as far as the sculptures, and they're still just being made today. That's the time that it takes to deliver things. But I would say that the idea of interest in money, now I've always have been self-reliant, and I was brought up to want to be self-reliant. And I've always enjoyed also trying to take care of, the community around me. But I never really felt the need for money. I just felt that if I did something well, automatically the immediate needs would be taken care of.
Jeff, it's been a real pleasure. Thank you so much for coming in.
Chris, thank you.
Jeff Koons is in town for Nasher Salon Series events. The Salon Series event tonight is sold out, but you can still get a ticket for a 3 o'clock performance at Booker T. Washington High School for the Performing and Visual Arts. Find information at nashersalonseries.org. My name is Chris Boyd. Thank you for listening, and have a great day.
Think is produced by Jeff Whittington and engineered by Jeannie Mascoro. Learn about upcoming programs, subscribe to our free daily podcast, and order CD copies of your favorite Think shows on the radio page of KERA.org. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@KERA.org.